The humid air of a Florida evening usually carries the sound of cicadas and distant traffic, but on this particular night in October, the atmosphere felt heavy with a silence that shouldn't have been there. I remember looking at the empty space in the parking lot where a car should have been, the asphalt still radiating the day's heat under the buzzing streetlights. It was a standard Thursday for most people, the kind of evening where the transition from work to home is an unconscious routine. For those left waiting, that routine had been shattered without a single scream or a sign of struggle. The early morning light eventually crawled over the horizon, revealing a world that was missing one of its own. When the report first hit my desk, it was just a name and a set of last known coordinates. The digital footprint of a woman who had simply ceased to exist between her office door and her front porch. We started at the point of disappearance, a nondescript commercial area where the mundane nature of the surroundings made the vanishing feel even more predatory. There were no broken windows and no scattered belongings to guide the initial walkthrough. The silence of the scene was the first real piece of evidence we encountered, suggesting that whatever had transpired had been swift and perhaps hauntingly quiet. I began the process by establishing a strict chronological timeline of the victim's final documented movements. On the afternoon of her disappearance, Yolanda Lind had completed her shift and exited her workplace in Clearwater. A detail confirmed by electronic badge swipes and witness statements from colleagues, she was seen walking toward her vehicle in a manner that suggested no distress or awareness of an impending threat. I spent the first several hours of the investigation interviewing the last people to speak with her, looking for any mention of a stranger or a vehicle that seemed out of place. Every person described a woman who was consistent in her habits and dedicated to her family, which immediately ruled out a voluntary disappearance. We tracked her vehicle through automated license plate readers, which showed her car moving toward her residence, but the trail went cold just miles from her destination. I coordinated with local patrol units to canvass the entire route, looking for any sign of a mechanical breakdown or a traffic accident that might have gone unreported. We found nothing on the shoulders of the roads or in the nearby ditches, forcing us to look deeper into the digital shadows of the city. The investigation then shifted toward her personal inner circle, as is standard procedure, but no immediate red flags appeared in her recent history or financial records. I directed the team to expand the search radius and begin the grueling task of collecting every bite of private and public surveillance footage available along her projected path. The breakthrough came when we secured a series of high-definition recordings from a private residence and a nearby business that overlooked a critical intersection. I sat in a darkened room for hours, scrolling through frame after frame of grainy night vision footage until a specific vehicle caught my eye. It was a dark-colored sedan that appeared to be following Yolanda's car at a consistent distance, never overtaking but never falling behind. This was not a coincidence of traffic, as the sedan mirrored every turn she made through a series of side streets that were not typical for a main thoroughfare. I flagged the timestamp and began a coordinated search for that specific make and model across the regional database. As we followed the digital breadcrumbs, the footage revealed the dark sedan pulling alongside her vehicle at a stop. The resolution was just clear enough to see a figure emerge from the driver's side of the tailing car and approach Yolanda's window. There was a brief interaction that lasted less than 60 seconds before both vehicles moved off screen in tandem. This indicated a level of coercion or a pre-existing connection that we had not yet identified. I ordered a forensic enhancement of the plates, which eventually led us to a registration linked to an individual named Jerome Miller. Upon cross-referencing this name with Yolanda's past, a connection emerged that reframed the entire investigation from a random act of violence to a targeted confrontation. The evidence shifted from the streets to the technical data recovered from the suspect's own devices and the forensic processing of the vehicles involved. When we located the dark sedan, the interior had been recently scrubbed with heavy chemicals, but the scent of bleach was an immediate indicator of an attempt to destroy biological material. I authorized a luminol application, which revealed significant blood spatter patterns on the passenger side and the floorboards, despite the visual cleanliness of the car. We then turned our focus to the cellular data, which provided a precise GPS map of Miller's movements on the night of the murder. The pings showed him lying in wait near Yolanda's office for over 2 hours before she exited the building. The data further tracked him following her to the intersection we saw on camera, and then moving toward a remote wooded area in a neighboring county. I reviewed the digital forensic report, which showed Miller had performed several internet searches regarding decomposition rates and police tracking capabilities in the days leading up to the crime. This established a clear pattern of premeditation and intent. During the search of his residence, we recovered a set of keys belonging to Yolanda's vehicle, hidden inside a venting system. The most damning piece of evidence was a short video clip found on a cloud storage account linked to Miller, which showed him in a state of agitation hours after the disappearance. This recording, while not showing the act itself, contained a verbal admission of a struggle and his regret over the situation getting out of hand. The recovery of Yolanda's remains in the wooded area, indicated by the GPS pings, allowed the medical examiner to perform a full autopsy. The findings confirmed that the cause of death was blunt force trauma and strangulation, consistent with a violent struggle within the confined space of a vehicle. I sat across from Jerome Miller in the interrogation room and presented the timeline we had built from the surveillance tapes and his own digital footprint. He initially attempted to provide an alibi, claiming he was at home during the hours in question, but he fell silent when I produced the photographs of his car at the intersection. The legal proceedings moved forward with a mountain of forensic and digital evidence that left little room for a defense. In 2024, Miller was brought to trial, where the prosecution laid out the case exactly as the cameras had recorded it. The jury was shown the progression from the stalking at the workplace to the final movements toward the disposal site. It took less than 4 hours of deliberation for the jury to return a verdict of guilty on charges of first-degree murder and kidnapping. The judge sentenced Miller to life in prison without the possibility of parole, citing the calculated and predatory nature of the crime. Yolanda's family sat in the front row, holding photographs of a woman whose life was stolen by a man who refused to let a past connection fade. The case was officially closed, leaving only the cold record of the surveillance tapes as a witness to the final moments of a life that should have ended safely at home.